So we're starting late today because of me, and I hope that doesn't throw our whole, like, thing off. It probably won't, but we're, like, almost an hour late.
It's so a severe rain day here. I don't care. There's nothing to do.
Have you taken advantage of your free hour this morning?
Yeah, more coffee.
Yeah, that's it. I just scrolled to more coffee. I'm working on an ice pick poster, so that is what I did before we get started. I was just fiddling on Illustrator, having my coffee. But it is pouring here. Everything is flooded. I just saw some clips of Albany, which is a town, a city about 30 miles north of me. Everything is flooded. I can't imagine what's going on in the city. It seems the New York City floods no matter what. Just, I guess, with climate change, and it just can't keep up with the amount of rain. And so I don't know what's going on. I'm looking forward to seeing all the clips of all the flooding in New York City today. Yeah, that's it. So the wait was okay. It's pouring rain outside. You guys don't have rain, right?
Not today, but I think this weekend it's going to rain all weekend long.
It started yesterday morning, well, yesterday afternoon at about noon, and it's been going ever since. I haven't even taken a drive yet, but I imagine the creek down the road is probably overflowing. It's like there's like severe flood warnings everywhere. But my house is high up. I'm about 2,000 feet above sea level, so I don't usually get any problems. But there's lots of creeks around here that always overflow, so I'm going to take a drive after we talk just to see what's going on.
When I was in Costa Rica a few weeks back, there was a huge storm that came through, at least this area. I don't know where all it hit. But one of the guys that was with us is the head of public works in my town. And so even though he was out of the country, he was getting texts and, you know, pictures and stuff from like the mayor and all these different people about like, what do we do about this? And we need to fix this. And there's the flooding over here. And it was crazy because in our neighborhood, like on the end of our neighborhood, it connects to another neighborhood and there's a low kind of drainage spot where both planes, you know, go down into this thing. And the water was so heavy and moving so quickly that it picked up a dumpster from an apartment complex and pulled it downhill and then put it in this like drainage basin thing. So that he showed me this picture of a dumpster sitting upright in the middle of a thing. It should have been a couple feet down if it was on the ground, but it was up on something, a car or something. But yeah, we had a lot while we were gone, but I'm the same way. Like my house is one of the highest spots of the neighborhood, so everything drains away from us. So we don't ever have problems, but there are a lot of people around us that have a lot of flooding issues. And in fact, one of the guys that was with us, his whole basement flooded. They had like several feet of water. And he was in Costa Rica. And so his wife was calling him and like, what do I do about, you know, how do we move the stuff and drain the water? And it was a mess.
But. Yuck.
David, you're not in your office.
No, we're out at the lake house. Yesterday was Kelly's birthday. So we blocked the week off for us to stay here. And so there's a detached garage, and on the back half, the water side of the garage, there's this bar built into it. And so I am in that bar looking out at the water channel. So I got a great view of the water and some wildlife out here. So yeah, this is the best making it podcast ever for me right now. Yeah. There's like French doors and I got the doors open and there's a nice little breeze coming in. So I don't have my normal mic. So I have my lav mic taped underneath my shirt, and I didn't think to bring a normal podcasting mic. But I always pack like a camera and a lav mic just in case. And so that's what I'm using. So if I sound a little different, it's because of that. And I'm in a small untreated room. And speaking of treated, I see your bass trap behind you. What's going on there, Bob?
Oh, it, fell.
Oh,
it's in the corner. And I use command strips because it had to go into a corner that is attached to one concrete wall, one wooden panel wall, and a drop ceiling. So it's like three different materials. So I use command strips. And the other day it just fell down. So I just moved it. But I'm also, actually, you can't see this, but behind my desk, I had that big, do you remember I built a big sound diffuser panel with like a bunch of cedar strips and everything? I took that down. And I'm covering that whole concrete wall with like acoustic paneling, these like the strips, like teak strip stuff with black on the back. And so I've just started that process and I'm trying to improve the audio quality in here, not even for the podcast, even though it's a thing I do every week. We were recording vocals for one of my daughter's new songs last week, and the whole time I was like, man, I just really need to get around to fixing that concrete wall, because it's part of the problem, changes the sound. So I'm doing it, finally doing it.
Nice.
Everything's a mess, though, at the moment.
As always.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. But anyway, you sound different, but you sound fine. But have you been working this week, or you've been off, like, just relaxing all week?
A little bit. Mostly relaxing, but there is another video that has to go out, which I just uploaded this morning, and I got to work on the description and all that little stuff, and so it'll go live either later today or tomorrow. And then I've started, when we were back home, I started this little customization project, and it's just this little cheap little thing I got off of Amazon that tells you the temperature of the room, and then it has three little satellite modules that you can place in other parts of the house or outside, and it'll tell you the temperatures of these areas. And we have one of those here at the lake house, because the upstairs doesn't, there's central air, but it doesn't work as well upstairs. And so we've got one of those little satellite temp things upstairs. We've got one on the patio and then one here in the bar. And it's just labeled 1, 2, 3, and you can't put custom labels on there. And so I thought, well, I'm going to take it apart and then I'm going to recase it, do my typical Pacciuto thing. So that's kind of the project that we're working on. I took it apart. We filmed that at the house, and now I'm here and I got my calipers and I'm going to 3D. I got a 3D printer here and I'm going to 3D print parts, the complicated parts that needs to hold the electronics, and then make the rest out of wood. So it's,
cool.
In theory, it should be a really simple project. And that's always the fear, is like, is this too simple for a video? Which I think we might get into a little bit later. Yeah, so that's what I'm working on. Cool. So, relaxing, but also doing work that I find relaxing, like drawing and measuring and stuff on the computer. We can watch a movie, or, you know, it's not heavy lifting. There's no grunt work. It's all just fun on the computer type stuff.
Yeah, cool. Oh, good. Jimmy, what about you? What are you up to?
Have you guys see the woven chair that I made? I don't know if I ever sent you guys a picture, but it's in the Instagram.
Yes.
Did.
It looks awesome.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Rachel insisted I make a second one right away. And since I stole Rob's wood off the wall, Rob's like, where'd you get that walnut? I was leaning over there. He goes, that was mine. I was like, all right, you want a couple $100? He's like, no, don't worry about it. So I said, Rachel's like, let's make a second one. I go, I don't have any wood. And Rob volunteered to give me some more of his wood from his secret stash across the street. So thank you, Rob. So last night I started working on that. So I'm making a second one, which I'll probably just show on Instagram once I have a pair. I used exactly one half of it's a half hide, which is, it's about 28 square feet of leather. So I used half of that to make the one chair. So I have exactly the other half. So I have the right amount of the same color leather to make the other half. And I have the walnuts gluing up. So I'll CNC that probably later today. What else am I working on? I'm also, if you see some of my socials, I'm posting a little bit about the boat that I made 3 years ago, because Total Boat at Maker Camp is doing the Total Boat Show, and they're inviting anybody that has a handmade wooden boat to bring to the show. It doesn't have to be made with Total Boat. They just want to do a boat show. And I'm going to bring three. I'm going to bring my canoe, Nick's canoe, and then my rowboat. But I'm also setting up the boat mold for the rowboat so that people can glue strips onto it. So I'm basically starting a second rowboat. I don't think I'll finish it. I'm encouraging some of my friends behind the scenes who need projects to finish it, but it will be at Maker Camp. I have enough wood. I have enough long straight grain wood, but we gotta rip it up. Me and Rob are going to start ripping it up. When I made my boat, I made it out of parts from the porch. So each thing had to be scarf jointed. It was a very arduous process because nothing was long enough. So I had to scab pieces together. This case, I have long enough wood, so this will go a little bit faster. Whether I finish it or somebody else finishes it, it'll probably end up at Total Boat because there's not enough time during the weekend to make a camp to finish it. But who knows? If there's several people on it, there is a possibility. I was clamping everything, but we could also do staples. That moves things along faster. You do staples, you staple the strips onto the mold, and then when you pull the nails out, you just have holes, which is the consequence of moving fast. But they're all patterned the same, so it's not so bad. So I don't know, I'm working on that, and...
You might have to explain, when you say Nick's boat, we probably have some new listeners since the last time you explained what Nick's boat is.
Years ago, 2008, the summer of 2008 going into the winter of 2009. No, is it 2007? Wow. The fall of 2007, me and Nick.
Offerman.
Me and Nick Offerman. Thank you. me and Nick Offerman made friends that summer. This was all before Parks and Rec, before he became an international A-list celebrity. We made friends. He worked with my brother, so Nick and I became friendly. And because he was moving to New York, he needed to meet other woodworkers, so my brother introduced us. And Nick wanted to build a canoe, and the fast story is I ended up being the videographer for the canoe company that provided the plans. And we shot 25 hours of footage that fall going into the next summer. And we ended up making a boat, which is called the Huckleberry, which is the one Nick uses all the time. I say we, but I was standing beside him. Nick did all the work. I just filmed him. And then the second boat he made was the Lucky Boy, which is the canoe that he uses in the final scene of Parks and Rec on the lake. And he had just finished it that week. It had taken a lot longer to finish the second one because his schedule changed. And so that's the Lucky Boy, because he said, what do you want to name your canoe? And my Yorkie, some of the old timers remember Lucky the Yorkie. He passed away in 2014, but Lucky was my Yorkie at the time. So I would come and film Nick at this Red Hook, Brooklyn warehouse working on and Lucky was always running around. So he's in the video a little bit. And so we called the second boat the Lucky Boy. So the Lucky Boy is hanging in my dining room. In fact, I just did an Instagram story. I did a Patreon story on it this morning. And that's going to be at Maker Camp. We're going to take it down from the ceiling and bring it over to Maker Camp, along with the woody car, which has taken a beating from the rain. Some of the wood didn't hold up over the year, so I'm going to bring it back over to the house and fix that up. It's the veneer that's on the metal doors. It got water behind it, and the water just soaks through out to the outside, so I might have to change the veneer on the metal doors because it's turning black. But besides that, all the other woodwork is fine. So I'm going to fix up I got the canoe, Nick's canoe, the boat mold, and the woody. So everything made by wood that lives outside. And what else am I working on? I'm working on something else. Oh, I did a whole bunch of leather work yesterday. I had a lot of half-finished leather projects. So because it was such a rainy day, I'd like staying up in the leather shop because it's cooler up there on a rainy day. And I finished up like 6 or 7 leather bags that were half-started. That's good to put all that to bed. And, this week I'm working with Evan from, Evan's Woodwork. I recommend Evan's channel today. Evan's coming. We're going to do a collab this weekend. So we're going to be working on that. So I'm cleaning up the shop in preparation for Evan to come by. And what else? That's it. Just loose ends, a lot of loose ends.
That's it. Come on, man.
Oh, and then last night. Oh, so this is a funny story because it was raining torrentially hard rain. So I was in the leather shop for hours and I kept trying to think of reasons to go back to the house to get a drink or something. And it was pouring rain out. And it's about a 600, 700 foot walk. And I didn't want to get wet. So I stayed in there. And now it's dark out. And I'm like, what do I do? I don't feel like walking to, I don't have an umbrella. I'm going to get completely soaked walking to the house. So I went to the pottery section of the horse barn and I ended up making 8 cups on the wheel. So I did that last night too. Worked on the pottery wheel, more practice. It's funny. This is a whole subject, but my Patreons keep seeing me make stuff on the pottery wheel. I keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over, trying to make 1 pound, 1.5 pound cups. And the reason I keep doing that is because I'm trying to find the technique that feels natural to me. Every time I do another cup on the wheel, it feels like I'm doing it for the first time. I'm like in the ballpark, But every single time I do it, I'm like, oh, I messed that up. Oh, that's uneven. Oh, I didn't center that right. And I'm trying to get to the point where I can be like David, my teacher, where he just throws it on, gets the same thing every time, or he can hit the same mark every time. So every once in a while, or at least I try and do it once a week, where I just throw 6 or 8 pieces of clay just to try and understand. And last night, I finally had a little bit of a breakthrough. I realized how to hold my hands a certain way to do the pull up. So you center it, you pull up your fingers in the middle, and then you pull up the wall, whether you're making a cup or a vase or a planter. And last night, I started to get it. I just finally started to get it since doing this since January, where it doesn't feel like I fumbled my way through success. You understand what I'm saying? It's like, no, like, for instance, when we first started the CNC machines, like, is today the day I'm going to not break a bit? Is today the day I'm going to get my first cut the right way? Is today the day? Now we all, because we've all been doing it for 10 years, we can sit at the CNC machine like we're printing out a copy from the computer from Acrobat. And I'm not there yet with the pottery. Repetitive, being repetitive on the wheel, I think is really important. I'm not trying to jump to anything big or complicated. I'm just trying to make the same simple thing over and over and over. I start with just 1 pound. How can I take 1 pound of clay? And every single time I get slightly different results. I'm trying to get to the point where every time I hit that 1 pound of clay, it's going to come out exactly the same. Not exactly, but within the ballpark. Obviously, hand throwing, everything's slightly different, but I'm on my fifth one and it rips in half. I was like, why is that happening? I just did 5 good ones. And then my sixth one, I rip it in half. Like what am I doing wrong? And so I saw somebody make the note of intentionally break it. And I wasn't trying to intentionally break it, but I got to that point where I broke it. But I did see some teacher said they make all their students pull up until it rips. So they understand the edge. So I need to do that more.
Interesting.
But the idea of just repetitive, getting used to it, understanding it. And so long story short, I had a couple of little breakthroughs last night, which was nice. And I feel like I need to jump right back into it again.
Now, let me ask you, those breakthroughs, is it something that you can explain or is it just you just feel?
I can explain
a little bit.
The breakthrough that I had last night is I'm trying to do pulling up. I'm trying to pull up the walls. And you go like this. You do this little S shape between your fingers. And I keep using this, my middle finger, because it has a full fingertip. I don't use my pointer finger because the fingertip was cut off on glass when I was a kid. So I feel like I shouldn't use my bum fingertip because I feel like I'm not going to feel it. But to be perfectly honest, I didn't feel it with my second fingertip. My first fingertip, I could feel what's going on. And so last night, for the first time, I started using my pointer finger. I just always leave it out of the equation every time I do something because there's no feeling in the tip of it. So anytime I do something, I'm just like, I always just use my second finger as my first finger. That makes sense. And last night, I started using my pointer finger and it works better. So that's a stupid little thing that would only happen for me because not everybody has a numb front finger, numb pointer finger from cutting glass.
Not everybody has the hand trauma that you've had throughout your entire life.
Yes. I cut my fingertip off on broken glass when I was about 17. You could see half my fingertip is missing. So anyway, that was my breakthrough last night. I was able to use my bad finger for good.
Well, there's our title.
Yeah.
That's great.
So anyway, that's my breakthrough. And then I'm going to start, just so everybody knows, I'm going to start working on an episode of The Graveyard House to just say where I'm at. It's not over. It's certainly not done, but it's not an ended series. Some people are afraid it's ended. It's not. I'm waiting on the architect, but I'm going to do an episode. Probably my next video will be that. It won't be this weekend because I'm going to be working with Evan, but it'll probably be next weekend. I'll have a graveyard update. So that's cool. Where I'm at. That's what I'm working on.
Right on. I have kind of a weird week. Like I finished my climbing wall over the weekend. And I worked on it throughout last week. And then this weekend, I kind of took advantage of just some free time to get the paint done and get the holds up and got the mats down. And I think it was on Monday, I actually spent some time climbing, which was really cool. and I'm really out of shape. Like it was, it was very obvious as I was climbing, like, man, it's been a really long time since I've done this for more than a couple of minutes. But it's pretty awesome. I spent some time in there climbing, but it's so hot. It's been incredibly hot.
Is the heat getting way trapped up there?
Several days. Well, not even in the high spot, just the entire room. Like yesterday, the heat index here was 107. It just, the humidity is super high. It feels really gross. So not only is it hot in there, even with fans blowing and air moving through, but when you climb, you have to use chalk on your hands to absorb the sweat in your hands so that you have grip. And so there's a chalk bag and you dip your hands in there and you get chalk all over your hands. And usually when you climb, even on a hot day, if you're kind of sweaty, the chalk will absorb the sweat and stay on your hands, and it is useful for grip. It was so hot and muggy inside the room the other day that I would put my hands in and the chalk would turn into like slime on my hand. It was just like, it didn't dry out. It was just like I had cream on my hand and it was just moving around. So it made it impossible to use the chalk the way it's supposed to be used.
That's the opposite.
So I climbed for a little while, but then I had to eventually kind of abandon it and just like, I got to wait for air conditioning or a cooler day or something. So, but it was fun because we had a bunch of the youth group over the other day to swim, and a bunch of these guys, you know, like high school guys that like to go up to the climbing gym and everything. They've been checking in to see if the climbing wall's done. And so I showed them that it was done. So a bunch of them got on it and they were just like taking turns, like going to the ceiling and then falling on the mats. And, you know, it was really cool to see it in use, not only by me, but my kids and then other people's kids. So that was pretty awesome, but I'm excited to have that done. And then my plan was to jump right to the next project, which is now delayed because of a sponsor thing and whatever. But also Jenny's out of town this week. She's spending time with family in Florida. And so whereas normally she does most of the driving people back and forth throughout the day to the stuff. And I help, you know, when she can't, she's gone. So I'm doing all of that. And it's like two a day soccer practices for two boys that are on two different age teams. And so there's four practices every day. So it's a lot of back and forth, which means I have not really gotten anything substantial done this week, which is fine. But I'm just, you know, making the most of my moments this week and trying to get little things done here and there. And when she gets back, I'll get back to work. But yesterday, because I had, you know, an hour and a half in between things to like, I can go do some stuff in the shop. I went down and I started looking around like, what can I do? Because all of the things that are on my project list over the next, I've got stuff kind of planned, roughly planned out for the next 3 or 4 months. And everything on that list is substantial. It's like, this is going to take at least 2 weeks to do. This is going to take at least a week of hard work. And every one of them requires some planning, some design, some gathering of materials, waiting on it. You know, they all have their stuff, right? And so I was like, what can I do to add a quick, not to be quick, not to do something fast, but I have a limited amount of time. What could I do that would be interesting in a limited amount of time? And so I got to looking around and couldn't really think of anything. And I was sort of like, all right, well, what bothers me in the shop? I haven't been in the shop for a long time because I've been working on the climbing wall and working in the pool house and working on the Gia, and I've been out, which is great. What bothers me about the shop? And I started looking at all of my like random DeWalt tools, the stuff I use on a regular basis, not the stuff in the drawers, the drills, the drivers, the sander, the nailer, the zip saw. Those things are all in like a pile. And then all of the batteries are over here, like in a pile next to a pile of chargers. And I just have to swap them out. And it's all in the way. So I was looking at all that and I'm like, that's a thing. Both of those things are things that I would love to fix because they annoy me. But those as project videos are very 2014.
Yeah.
They are like hard to justify now because everybody yep. did that. Everybody solved that problem on YouTube 10, 12, 15 years ago. And so I was like, well, how, that's an interesting thing to think about. I still have a problem that has been solved a bunch of times. Should I try to come up with my own solution? I mean, yeah, that's what I do. So I probably will. But then how do I make that interesting? How do I draw people into that? And I ended up spending up this hour and a half I had. I spent about an hour of it thinking about like what the problem is. Is it worth trying to make that into content? And I think it is. And I think I figured out how to go about bringing somebody to it. But that's kind of what I think we were going to talk about today is like, having these conditions on yourself, on what you do. And maybe that's not what you meant, David. You can speak to that. But that stuck out to me is I have a condition about the minimum complexity for something I'm going to make for YouTube. And that threshold, it like has to be at least this interesting to be worth doing. Not interesting to me, interesting to other people. And so is that a false thing that I put on myself that I shouldn't put on myself? Is that what you meant when you
almost exactly. So there's a couple of things, and it started with the art show. It's something I noticed when I was making things that were more non-functional. I didn't care about perfection as much as when I'm making furniture. And I made a mental note and I said it out loud to Jefferson, like, I really should bring that into my furniture projects. Not everything has to be perfect. Somehow I have to figure out how to get over that. And then another element that I've been thinking about is, I want to be able to make inside baseball. This has been a pretty good season of sponsorships and potential sponsorships. And I'm like, well, you know, now's a good time to make some money because we need some money. And so I want to say yes to these sponsorships, but how can I make quicker videos that still feel satisfying to me and still have value to the viewers? And so that threshold of like, is this interesting enough for a video is always on my mind. Like, of course, or I need a silly little TV tray. But in my head, I'm thinking, you know what? I can't just make a TV tray because that's not interesting enough. Like Bob said, like that has been done. That was done in 2014 by 24 other people. And so I'm like, okay, well, what if I make 10 quick projects around the house and put that into a video? Then it gets more complicated. Yeah. And in my head, I'm like, that's a better YouTube video. But it doesn't have to be like that. Why I'm in this mindset of always outdoing myself, always trying to, I mean, I care about the videos. You guys care about the videos. I want it to feel good. And I also wanted it to have value. But I got to let go of some of those things and figure out what is interesting about just making a quick little TV tray. If, you know, like, okay, maybe I can challenge myself to do something I haven't done before, whether it, you know, could be hand tools or new technique or new material or whatever. And maybe that makes it more interesting for me. Because for a project to have value to me, there's got to be somewhat of a little challenge. If it's something I've done 100 times before, I'm not into it. I'm not interested. But man, I got to let go of this perfection and everything has to meet this certain threshold. Like you just described it exactly how I feel in my head about the projects. Hmm. And I see somebody like Adam Savage and he'll just like, oh, I'm going to just modify this thing so it works for me. And he makes a great video about it because he's not just modifying the thing, but he's given a story of like, oh, this tool came from this. I learned how to use this tool this way. And I'm like, oh,
it conjures up a lot. I think it's important to go down those paths. I mean, the older I get, the more I'm just like, well, let's see what happens. I try not to edit myself nearly as much as I did when I was younger. And that's because you just never know where you're going to find the interesting part of that story. You just have no idea where it's going to be. you have a concept and you think the outcome's not going to be interesting enough, but the journey is where it's, is where the meat and potatoes is. And you got to remember that. How you do a technique, if you, even if you're going to do a technique that you know you've done 100 times, you're like, how can I make this a little bit more interesting? How can I make this a learning experience for me and the audience? So it's important to go down those journeys, even though you think you know the final outcome.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to say this without it sounding like an insult at first. And I don't mean it that way at all. But Jimmy, I think you're really good at this. I think you're really, really good at taking an object that seems simple, or like the outcome could be simple, or the outcome is something you've done before, but the process and the visual path and stuff is way more interesting than I would have expected it to end up that way.
Oh, 100%.
So it feels like, from my perspective, you take a simple idea and you go like fan out, you know, like you expand the idea rather than take a simple idea and just straight line to the end. Yes, I have a caddy. Yes, I have a chair. Yes, I have a, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're really good at that. Whereas I, like, you edit yourself is a really good way to put it, because I edit myself way back at the beginning a lot.
Yeah, I try not to. And I learned a long time ago when I was doing videos for Make Magazine, and I had to do, I think, 2 videos a month, I think. I can't really remember. I would always make sure, I would always be like, no, that's not complicated enough. Well, that's not a big enough piece of work. And the breakthrough happened for me when I did the treasure chest. You guys remember I did like a simple treasure chest? Dave Welder was my cameraman. And I made this simple treasure chest. I thought of it 10 minutes before we started filming. I was like, oh, let me make a treasure chest. I'll plasma cut the steel, fold it up like cardboard, put wood inside. The video took me about an hour and a half, 2 hours to make. And it was a huge video for them. It got hundreds of thousands of views in the first week, which is what it always seemed like it used to do. It doesn't do that for me anymore. But that was a video where I learned you don't have to climb Mount Everest every single time. That's another thing. I would edit myself and be like, it's going to be like an hour's worth of work. There's not enough footage there. It doesn't look like a big enough effort. But now because of that particular video, I got over that fear of, is it enough labor? Is it enough visual difference? Edit. These are the things that cause me to put the brakes on a project. It's like, it's only going to take me an hour to do. Is an hour of real time enough footage to make a 10-minute video? You know, if it takes me 3 days to shoot something, I'm going to have a lot more video to choose from versus something that takes me 2 hours. I'm only going to have 2 hours worth of footage in real time. And then can I get a good
video? Isn't that ironic that you're like, I need more work to do. I need more sand to sift through.
Yeah, I mean, I'm over that. I'm over that now, but.
Instead of an hour, let's do 3 days.
Yeah, I'm over that. I'm over that thought now. But that was early on. I would always say, there's not enough work to put in to create enough visual stimulation in a 10-minute video. That's kind of how I approach things sometimes. But when it comes to, for instance, the go-kart video, there's like 6,000 different things. I still got to jam that same amount of information into 10 minutes, or the video ended up being like 35 minutes. I don't have any parameters anymore either. If the video is 6 minutes, it's 6 minutes. If the video is 35 minutes, it's 35 minutes. I stopped worrying. I used to jam everything into like a 10-minute. I had my 6-minute clips, then I had my 10-minute clips, I had my 15-minute clips. I don't care anymore. If the video ends up being 12 minutes and 50 seconds, that's it. I used to obsess about like the finish number. Dave?
You just made me think of something for myself where you'll see like, you know, you've all heard the stories or thought these thoughts where like you see a piece of art and you're like, oh, that took that person 1 hour. Why are they charging $5,000 for that? But it didn't take 1 hour. It took a lifetime to get there, right? So there's this whole journey to get to that point. It's like, okay, I now have 10 years of videos under my belt. I've got 15 years of experience using this particular tool. Now maybe somehow I can bring part of that journey into this little thing. So like, might seem like a small nothing project to me, but maybe somebody else is going to get great value out of that. But at the same time, I have these other parameters where I'm like, well, I don't want to teach. I want to inspire. So I want somebody to see something that I do and take that and run with it on their own. So I keep putting these little fences around what I think should be my project. And I need to just tell myself, like, that fence is there for a reason. But it's okay to step out of bounds every once in a while and allow that. And so I think for myself, I need to say less of, hey, this is what the channel is moving forward, and just do the thing instead of announcing the thing.
Yeah, I never make announcements.
It feels like when I make the announcement of like, oh, we're only doing this from here on out. Like it feels like, oh, I'm setting rules for myself. And now I feel bad when I break the rules. If I just keep it to myself and have these. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, having those rules, those guidelines internally is great because it helps you focus. It helps you kind of stick to the thing that you think you're good at or you want to put out or whatever. But yeah, when you say those guidelines out loud to somebody else, then it becomes like a weight rather than a guardrail,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So I had an interesting thing. The last video I put out was the Gia video, and it was doing the last bit of metalwork. And I put this off forever, like easily a year of it, the last little corner. It was about this big section at the bottom of the car. I needed to replace the inside piece and the outside piece and add a little piece to connect it all. And I put it off because, like, historically, people don't really, not as many people watch the Gia videos, especially, like, more metalwork, because I've done so many of those things. You know, it's just like, okay, now I'm going to do the same thing on this panel. Now I'm going to do the same thing on this panel. And we've tried to make it interesting and whatever. So the other day, in between my trips, I had a few, like, less than a week, at a few days. And I'm like, all right, challenge myself to just figure out how to get these pieces done, make the video about the challenge, about just doing the thing and getting it done. And another problem with it, or difficulty, I didn't know how to make it interesting visually because it was literally this, like what I could fit in my hands. The whole thing was right here. There was no big machines to use. There were no scenic things to look at. It was just right here. And so anyway, I just like challenged myself in the video to, I have 4 days. I want to get this thing done, whatever. It worked out great. I got it done in 3 days instead of four. I also fixed the doors, and I was worried about the doors not closing on it. And we've talked about that a bunch of times. I got the doors to close and they're good. It's fine. And I got done before I wanted to get done. So I was like, all right, I did the thing. The work is done. The video is going to tank. It never does well because it's a Gia video. I put that video out, and it was a 1 of 10, which for non-YouTube people means it was the best performing video of the last 10 in that time period. And that changes over time. Like now, I think it's number 3 or whatever, but that's amazing. And also shows me how little I know about the job that I've been doing for several years. Because like every time I think this is going to kill it, or this video nobody's going to watch, I'm just wrong. And that's frustrating from one perspective, but also kind of freeing, I guess, if you look at it from that direction. You know, it's, I don't know. So why not do the thing that might end up being really better than I, you know, a lot better than I expected. I also ran into, I don't remember when this happened. It was earlier in the year, but I ran into a moment where I was working on something. I think it was in the pool house because it was like, I've been doing pool house videos, right? And so it's like construction and it's a different thing for me. And when I step back from the video and from the work, I look at it and the videos in general are a little self-serving, right? Like, I mean, on purpose, but also I'm making the thing for me. I have the opportunity, the blessing to be able to do what I do and enjoy the outcome of it, both professionally and personally. I get to have the thing that I'm making. And so it is self-serving from one perspective. And so I think I had a realization, I've had this before, about I have to make sure that the thing I'm doing is not just for me. Like, it's got to be for me, but it's also got to be for them, right? It's got to be, and I know everybody has different intentions about what they're doing, so I'm not pushing this on anybody else, but for me, the video has to make a thing for me enough for me to care about it, but the video itself has to be useful enough for other people for them to care about it. And I think I have forgotten that at different times in my career. And so whenever this was a few months ago, I had this realization that I need to make sure that one of the rules that I'm putting on myself is not about the object. It's not about how difficult it is. It's not about how whatever, all these things. One of the rules that should be kind of steadfast, that should always be there, is it good for me and is it good for them? Not or, both. It's got to be both, because if it's not both, then either the audience isn't getting out of it something useful, which for me is really important. And if it's not for me and only for the audience, then I'm not going to feel it. I'm not going to enjoy it. I'm not going to want to do it. You know, it's just, and that was a thing that ever since I've thought through that all the way, it's been this like two gate thing that all my ideas have to go through. And if I can't figure out the second half, is it good for them? Then I have to pause the idea and figure out how to make it good for them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of the little, I don't know, guardrails or whatever that I've put around that I want to keep. But the complexity guardrail, where like it has to be a step up from the last one, or it has to be epic, or it has to be bigger or complex, or
no, every once in a while you need
whatever,
a breather.
All these
you
things
need a simple
on.
One. Every yeah. once in a while you need like a simple, clever thing, which is for me is it's like. And those simple, clever videos sometimes are the ones that really kill it. You think you need to build an electric go-kart out of aluminum and steel, and then you do something simple like a belt buckle, and that's what takes off.
Yep.
Or electric belt buckle. Did you think of that? You didn't think of
that. With wheels on it. I'm working on that now.
With wheels on it. Are there any other conditions other than the ones that we've talked about that you all put on yourself that you don't want or do want, maybe?
I talk about the visualization of it. Like I said, like the way you talked about how you're only just stuck in one thing, which is why I kind of have chickens and other visual stimulation around so I can cut to a rooster crowing instead of just hanging on a clip. And I need to do that more often, honestly. But that's always a consideration. It's like, is this going to be just a video of me looking at the CNC machine the entire time? Which now I have to do that once a month. So, yeah. To kind of figure out how to... It's always a challenge to make it look interesting.
So you can always, like, personify it. You know, like, make the CNC into a character that you... I don't know, you dress it up different every time, or you talk to it, or have like a funny conversation with it. You know what I mean? Give it a thing. Like, I kind of do that with Boone, with my dog, because he's cute and people like to look at him, but also it is a good break. And he already has a personality, so it's not the same thing. But by bringing out his personality, it gives that like a distraction to the viewer from the work, you know, it's not.
Yeah. Dave, you had a thought
on your CNC machine.
I always feel like the next thing should somehow be a continuation of the previous thing. And where I'm talking about, like, I'm trying to develop my style, like this needs to be Pachuto style. And we're going to use walnut again, which seems to upset a couple people. Like, will you use something else besides walnut? I'm like, well, this is the aesthetic that we chose for this area of the house, so I'm going to keep using it. Plus, I have now become known as the walnut guy in my town, and so I've gotten free walnut.
Bummer.
People are, yeah. And so I'm going to keep using what is available to me. But... the fences that they're in place for a reason, because I'm trying to work towards a particular goal, and I don't know where I was going to go with it, but I do try to avoid here's a back and forth that I have in my head. I don't want to do the YouTuber thing where, like, I'm challenging myself to do this thing with only these materials and this blah, 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 because those seem very YouTuber to me, YouTuber-y to me, where these self-imposed limitations and challenges. But at the same time, those can actually make the project fun for me. So how do I make the challenges about me and not about the click? And I know this is so inside baseball and everything, but this is the stuff that I think about constantly all the time. And, you know, it goes back to, like, without some sort of challenge, the project isn't fun for me. And it needs to either be self-imposed or just due to limitations of either my skill or my tools or my materials or whatever. So I don't know. It's, I just need to loosen up, but still have the boundaries there.
Cool.
And stop thinking about the YouTube algorithm, but it's hard because
it is hard.
Everything depends on it.
Yeah. I think that has gotten a little bit easier for me over the last year or so. I mean, I still have to think about it. Like, you can't avoid it, but I think I also have settled into a little bit more of, like, I can't control it. It's not a thing. It's an individual viewer thing. And so every viewer has viewing behaviors that YouTube is keeping track of and making decisions based on. And so it's not a thing to solve. It is every viewer's preference and behavior that changes what they have the opportunity to see, which sucks for viewers, honestly. I mean, it's not, I don't think it is in their favor, but that's the way it works. But that means there's no thing to solve. There's no thing to beat. There's no algorithm. There's no true algorithm to try to fit into. And that's gotten a little bit easier for me to, like, yeah, all right, cool. So I have no control. I'm just going to, I need to do the thing that I want to do and try to make it as, I don't know, appealing as possible, you know? I mean, that's kind of the best I can put at it. But any other thoughts on any of this?
The other thing, too, is you're new to YouTube, you're trying to define what it is. If you're new to anything, you're trying to define what it is. You're like, I'm not going to do these things. I'm not going to do these things. I'm only going to learn how to do those things. And as time goes on, you got to keep it interesting. I mean, we've been at this game for well over 10, 12, 13, 14 years. That things that you would think you would never do back in the beginning, now you're like, doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter. It's just like you put these restraints on for one reason or another because you think you're being boring or you think you're stepping outside your lane. You got to keep it interesting for you, and you got to keep it interesting for the audience that's growing old with us. So be flexible.
Yep.
Mm. One of my least favorite comments is the stay in your lane. Oh, boy. Mm. Like, if I just stayed in my lane, I wouldn't be where I'm at.
Yeah. Oof. Do you still get stuff like that?
No, not. It's been a while, but I have gotten those particular comments before.
And I got one the other day.
They stick with you.
I got one the other day that said, "Man, this channel has really run down. Has really come down a long way." I'm like, why? I just delete them. I don't even comment. I just delete it. But it's like, this channel is really not what it used to be. Something like that. I was like,
I would hope I'm not what I used to be. Good Lord.
No, but it's like, I mean, I made
isn't
a
that the then, goal that we're not what we used to be?
I just thought it was so funny. I'm like, I don't know. Of course.
I was, I've been rereading this book called Art and Fear. And the first time it didn't really hit me. And for whatever reason, this time it it's really impacting and making me think. And one of the things it talks about is like your, when you look back at old work and you're either embarrassed by it or it doesn't feel up to your standards. And it goes a whole chapter of just like, yeah, that was a younger, immature version of you that made that particular thing. Of course, you're going to look back at it and think, oh, I don't like that, because you've developed so much. You've accumulated so much more knowledge and talent. And, that's something I've been thinking about too, because I am embarrassed by some of the old stuff. And, yeah, I'll get the, like Jefferson, he's like, oh, I watched the old video where you made the so and so. And I was like, ugh. And he's like, no, it was great. But in my head, I'm like, oh, don't watch that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was that was a different person than you are now. So like, it's easy to, for us personally to be embarrassed of like the things that we were, but you can really say like, you are a different person than that. That was a person at that time and you are not that same person. I saw a parenting, I don't know, Instagram account or something the other day that talked about similarly with a kid, like as your kids grow older, you always can tell when certain things change. Like there comes a point where kids don't look at you this as a parent, don't look at you as the same way that they used to. Because when they're really tiny, they look at you like you are everything to them. You are the world. And you can see it in their eyes. And then as they get a little bit older, you're not everything, you're something. And you can tell that too. And then eventually when they're a teenager, you're nothing. And then when they get past the grumpy teenager part, you can see them look at you a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And so this thing was talking about how we kind of mourn the different parts of our kids' lives as they change from one thing to another. But instead of focusing on the fact that they're not that anymore, you got to focus on what they are, because you're being introduced to a brand new person every couple of years, or maybe every year, you know, when as kids are growing up, which is amazing. If you think about it, like you can still think, yeah, I loved the 3-year-old. I loved the 6-year-old. And I remember those times, but now I get to love the 13-year-old. Now I get to love the 18-year-old or whatever. And it's the same kind of thing with us, just as adults in our own history. You know, we can look back and say, like, I really liked being naive enough to think that that was a good idea. And now,
oh man, the freedom. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't know any better, right? And we got to do whatever was worthwhile at the time. And that's great. But we're not there and we don't have to do the same stuff, you know? So, cool. I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, unless you guys have anything else. Jimmy, did you have something?
No. I think we're good.
Oh, I didn't hear what you said. Cool. Well, big thanks to everybody over on Patreon for supporting the show and for being around and helping us do this and get together every week. It's really, really cool that we get to do this, and we're really grateful for the support at every level. It all matters. The people that support a dollar, the people that support the top level, we're grateful for every single bit of it. And everybody gets the after show. So if you want to go and get the after show for a dollar, do it. If you want to be on the top level so we say your name in just a second, do it. But everybody gets it. The people that go way above and beyond that help out the show a whole lot, I always want to give them a shout out. That is Works by Solo, Tinia Space Industries, The New Janky Workshop, Rich at Low in Art. Rich, that messes me up still. It was Low in Design. Now it's Low in Art. Odin Leather Goods. Nick Ryan, Master of None, Jim from Wiser Bees, Hatch Exhibits, which is a new supporter this time, I think.
Hatch is great.
Daddy Yourself Hatch. DIY, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. So we are grateful for all of them and everybody else that I'm not naming. Thank you all very much. If you want to get on that list or you want to support the show, get the after show, go to patreon.com/makingit. Join up at whatever level you want. The link for that, if you just want to click a link, is in the show notes. Or, you know, on the website or whatever. There's a million ways to get to it. Patreon.com/makingit.
Nick, I approve the change.
Say what?
I approve Nick's change, going from designs to art.
Oh, Rich. Yeah.
Rich.
Yeah.
Oh, Yeah. Nick, I also approve what you do, too.
Now, if he changes it to Nick at Low and Art next time, that's going to mess me up. Big time. Right. Don't do it, Rich. All right. You guys got anything to recommend this week?
I have a great thing, but I wanted to say one thing about you reading the names off. So you never know who you're going to meet, right? So this weekend I did 4 days at the county fair here in Greene County, and I cut names out for kids and people. They're shooting a movie in the area. Emily Blunt and John Kuransky are shooting the third version of some horror movie I never heard of. But there's all types of, you see the production.
Oh, Quiet Place? Dude, you got to watch The Quiet Place.
I think that's it. Yeah. They're literally shooting in my mile away from my house. And it's been going on. It's been going. Bob's reacting to that. And one of the cameras, I wish I had your name, buddy. I don't have it here. We just followed each other on Instagram. But you, Bob, you said his name once when you did a rando. When you did a random, you know how you pull one person that's not in the top 10. You said his name once and you said it correctly, I think. I think you said it was correctly. Anyway, I'm sitting there cutting bandsaw names out for little kids, and a cameraman who's a fan of ours who does not live in New York State or even in Greene County walks up and says, I love the show. Thank you for what you do. So there you go. So thank you, brother.
That's awesome.
Text me this week and I'll say your name again next week. I gave him my number. So anyway, that's the story. But I'm going to recommend this amazing piano player. I did a screen grab of his name because I knew I wouldn't remember it. But I wanted to send it to you last night, Bob, but it was very late. And his name is, I'll send you the link, but it's L-E-V-I, Levi.S-E-T. I think he's European. But this clip he sent was amazing. But I'm also going to talk about Evan's workshop. Evan's coming here. We're going to do a collab this week. If you don't know Evan, Evan started his online social media when he was 10 years old. He's 18 now. You could watch him grow up on his stuff. You guys have all bumped into him one way or another at Workbench Con and wherever else. He's been to a lot of those. Evan and Rob, his dad, they're going to come here tomorrow. We're going to do a collab, and that video will be out shortly thereafter. But check out Evan's workshop. I'm going to send you both of those links in a minute, Bob.
Cool. Right on. What you got, David?
So this is a video. It's been in my watch later list for a while, and I actually just watched it this morning. It's called His Art is So Insane, Everyone Thinks It's AI. And the video is fantastic, and the artist himself is even more fantastic. The artist himself is called Nemo Gold, and I found him on Instagram. Jimmy, you already follow him, but he takes things and takes old things and makes sculptures and robots and stuff out of them. And some of it is animated, and it is just
his work is freaking incredible.
Cool.
It is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Highly recommend the video and then following this dude.
Cool. Right on. I don't have a video. I have a book that I am not finished with, but I love it so far. It's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And it is a Christian book, so I'll throw that out there. But I think whether that's a faith for you or not, there's some excellent, excellent practical, the world, you know, like how to live in the world that we live in right now in a better way. Because the world is hurried. The world is trying to get you to get more, be more, do more all the time. And I've been, you know, trying to actively go against that in my own life for quite a while. And so hearing the wisdom in the book about like, what's actually important to you? Do you really need the new iPhone? Do you really need to have two of that thing? Do you really need to have this? Or can you be happy with what you have and where you are and the people around you? And, you know, it's that type of stuff. Man, it is just, it's uplifting and it's freeing and it's just, it's a really good book. And the author reads the audiobook. Can't remember his name. I'll tell you in just a second. John Mark Comer. And he's got a really good like delivery. He's good to listen to. It's fun to listen to. It's a nice voice and stuff. So I would recommend this book for anyone, not just people like me. It's a very good book. In fact, it's one of those books, when I find a book that I like, I will immediately order like 5 or 6 copies of it, and I have a stack on my shelf. And so then as soon as I run into somebody that I think like, this book would be great for you, it's just like, I got it. Wait, here, take this. And this was one where I got to like chapter 3 and paused it and went on Amazon and ordered 5 copies of it. And just like, come on. So go check it out. The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. It's very good. You guys got anything else?
No. I'll tell you my book habit in the after show.
Okay. All right. Right on. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Love you.